Fred, especially to Andy. Nothing against you, Fred. Since you took half the sermon, everyone is appreciative. I hope everyone picked up on the fact that the passage Andy used at the table was the same passage that Sean read. That wasn't by design, quote unquote. Andy and I did not confer. But I think the topic, obviously, would lead us to that same conclusion. I'd like you all to take just a moment. Look around. We're going to be talking about the image bearer, if you will, of the church. What does that mean? We'll say, look around again. Who do you see? It's not a trick question. This is the church. So I want to ask another question. Well, I didn't ask a question. I want to ask a question now. When you look around, what do you see? What are you thinking about? Are you dwelling on things that aren't getting done? Insufficiencies? Problems? Or are you looking around thankful? Again, comments at the table. And I grant that this congregation, like any other, were made up of people. So do we have problems? I didn't hear an amen. Will we always have problems? Are we going to handle every situation properly? Are we going to attempt to handle every situation properly? Hopefully so. But we're going to make missteps. We're going to make errors. Individually, collectively. And I've spoken to enough of you all over the years at different times to know that sometimes you're ecstatic with the response that you give or you receive from the congregation in a given situation. And at other times, you're crushed and you're heartbroken. Some of those times are justified both ways. Steve's been going over in class situations. Particularly, we're talking about the idea of forgiveness and reconciliation today. Oftentimes in these situations, in and of themselves, our problem is our perception to begin with. We have a problem. I have a problem with Steve. I don't, but for the sake of... because of something he said or didn't say, or did or didn't do, and the way I received it. And you all have heard... Most of you that have been around here for a while have heard me say things like, I often have gone up to people to ask them, what have I done? What is the problem that we're having? And fortunately, most of the time, the response I get is befuddlement. I have any idea what you're talking about. Well, you know, I saw today or we crossed paths, or I said hello and you... didn't respond with your usual jovial response, or you ignored me whatsoever. And the response may come back with, my dog died. Fortunately, I did not kill your dog, so I know there wasn't anything I had to do. Or it could be any number of things. Problems at work. Could be like most of us. Our mind was someplace else altogether, and we just didn't even pick up on the attempt to connect. The point is, we need to talk to each other constantly. Not about each other, but to each other. The passage again in 1 John goes back to the relationship that Christ has with God and vice versa. And that closeness is tied together because they are so intertwined that they know what the other one is feeling. They understand that. I don't have that capacity. I need all the help I can get to understand what's going on in your life and your situation. I do not read minds. And most of the time, because of deficiencies in my own character, I don't necessarily pick up on cues that quote-unquote normal people do. I've never been accused of being normal. I'm surprised I didn't get an amen on that. But most of us aren't quote-unquote normal. We're created in the image of God with unique perspectives and benefits. Sometimes we let those things work against us, but God intends them to work for us. Just like in a marriage relationship. When he talks about a husband and wife coming together and cleaving together, and the phrase begin with a help meet created to begin with because we are deficient. Yes, men, I am saying we need help. And before you women get to amening on that, so do you. We can mesh together in such ways to benefit everyone around us. Or, conversely, we can behave in ways to bring others down around us. We have the unique opportunity and calling. Since we have put on Christ in general, most folks here have put on Christ, to behave in a way that behooves and demonstrates to others that we indeed belong to Him. That's a challenge for all of us, for some of us more than others. At different times in our lives, it's going to be a bigger challenge. But all the tools, again, have been given to us. For those that have been going through the class up here, primarily been focusing on Colossians, the constant reminder in Colossians and Galatians, Ephesians, or actually throughout the New Testament, and indeed throughout the Old, is the tools are all there. God has expected and put everything in place for us to be successful in our lives here upon this earth. And by successful, I mean in our ability to communicate to others and demonstrate to others who God is, what He means to us, the forgiveness that He's shown, the long-suffering that He's shown. And in turn has given us the challenge to behave as He does and as He is. Our challenge as a congregation is really no different than our challenge as individuals. And indeed, I would presented more like this. If you have a problem with the way this congregation behaves or reacts or doesn't react or whatever, I would suggest you probably need to take a good, long, hard look in the mirror. Because you're a part. And there's a good chance that what you're not seeing or the problems that you're having is coming from here. I'm not saying that 100%. Again, I'm not saying by any means that we as a group are perfect. However, if you have an issue, talk to us. Again, as I mentioned, I've dealt with some folks in the past that have had problems thinking that their situation wasn't being handled correctly. And in many cases, they were correct. And we tried to adapt and change. But the fact is, we wouldn't have known about that situation or that feeling without them telling us. Yes, we try to be aware. And one of the phrases used today, you ask somebody how they're doing and they say they're fine. I believe the suggestion was, and they actually respond to you truthfully or honestly. And some of us chuckle at that and some of us cringe. Any response we give to each other or to anyone else should always be honest. Shouldn't it? Isn't our yea supposed to be yea and our nay supposed to be nay? So if you're not fine when I talk to you and you tell me you're fine, you're not helping yourself and you're not helping me help you. A lot of you here, again, since I have been eyeball to eyeball with most of you at one time or another, know that oftentimes your response, I'm fine, is followed up by mine with, really? And that's not meant to be flippant, although I've been known to be that. That's not the case. Often I can see in your eyes or part of your demeanor that that's not the case. Now, I may not be the one to be able to help you. But again, I'm going to suggest look around. There are literally hundreds of people here. Someone can help you. Someone has either gone through, is going through, or knows someone who has or is going through what you're going through. That's not to say, again, even someone going through the same type of situation doesn't know exactly what you're going through. Because you're going to react differently than that individual. But they're going to have a clue. So let us make sure we're taking advantage of those opportunities. Christ, when he was talking to his disciples in the 17th chapter of John, gives a similar comments, if you will, to what was said in 1 John. Toward the end of that passage, he moves from talking to the elite group, if you will, those that were closest to him, and broadens it out, beginning in verse 20. I do not pray for these alone, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they all may be one, as you, Father, are in me, and I am you, that you may be one in us, that the world may believe that you sent me, and the glory which you gave me, I have given them, that they may be one just as we are one. I in them, you and me, that they be made perfect in one, and that the world may know that you have sent me and you have loved them as you have loved me. Father, I desire that they also, whom you gave me, may be with me where I am, that they may behold my glory, which you have given me. For you loved me before the foundation of the world. O righteous Father, the world has not known you, but I have known you, and these have known that you sent me. And I have declared to them your name, and you will declare it to me, and you will declare it, that the love with them, which I have, you have loved me, may be in them as I in them. Sobering words, comforting words. Should be words that prod us to action. Should be words to fill us with hope. Should help us individually and collectively behave in such a manner that others can truly wonder what is different about us in a good way. What is it that we have that allows us to endure the same hardships that everyone else does in the world, and the same challenges, but in a positive way? That's our faith in God, in our understanding, our confidence, and that He will continue to do what He says He will do, as He's always done what He said He will do. That's the God we serve. That's the God whom we're to reflect. Earlier in the John 14th chapter, in a conversation again with the disciples, he points out to them, basically they ask him, how can we've never seen the Father. How can we be like him? And his response is, you've seen me. If you've seen me, being Christ, you've seen the Father. Now again, we are not Christ, but we are to be Christ-like. As Paul reminds us, it's no longer I that live, but Christ lives in me. So I'm going to go out somewhat on a limb and suggest. When someone says to you, I haven't seen God, I haven't seen the Father, says to you, you should reflect upon that and consciously think, have I not embodied Christ? Have I not behaved in a way that would show you the Father? In essence, that's what he says we are to be. It is no longer I that liveth. And when we can get past ourselves in any given situation, we can resolve a whole host of potential conflicts and misunderstandings. I was going to attempt to go through Colossians 3, 2 Peter, Ephesians, Galatians. And I know we have some visiting with us. Sorry. But those passages all have a commonality. They talk about attributes and traits that we're to have as individuals. And oftentimes we seem to get ourselves kind of bound up in the idea that I need to concentrate on a fruit or one of the steps, building blocks. And again, I'm not saying there's no benefit to that. There are times we do need to focus on that. We have our individual weaknesses. But we need to understand that all those passages, the commonality is these are things that we are to have because we're Christ. Christ lives in us. They're not options, folks. It's not like I can sit back and say, well, you know, I'm generally pretty patient, so it's okay for me not to be something else. No, that's not the way it works. All these attributes and steps are integrated and built in together. And ultimately they culminate in such a fashion that we can be the examples we're to be in every situation. All of us, if we're honest with ourselves, recognize we fall short. Perhaps frequently. That should not dissuade us. Because we are told these things will be with us and abound if our faith is there. Yes, we are going to stumble. The benefit of the fact that we have this large family is the odds are someone's going to see it. Now, some of you are thinking, well, that's not really a benefit. And it may not be, depending on how that person reacts. But it should be a benefit because we should step in and in love lift each other up. And perhaps another one of the most misunderstood concepts in this idea of the love is that it's all touchy-feely. Yes, our arms are in to envelop each other. But there are times we need each other to admonish, to remind us, to be willing to stand up to us and say, that's not right. How good of a friend are you really being if you allow your brother to continue in sin? It's not a tough question. You're no friend at all. Sometimes we again allow ourselves to fall into that, well, you know, if I say something, then they're going to push me away. I'm not going to have an opportunity to bring them in. Is that a possibility? Duh. Of course it's a possibility. If you're doing it in love, it shouldn't happen. It still can. But you still have to do it. You got to plant that seed. Perhaps they will be upset and pull back from you. But if the seed's planted, God will grant the increase. If they're seeking, God will take care of it. And that's the other factor we have to constantly remind ourselves. We are not God. We do not control how someone else responds or behaves. We have control over one soul. Ours. And our intentions may be good. And our teaching may be sound. And it may even come from love and not be received. Because they're not seeking. That in no way is a suggestion that we stop teaching. Or we stop doing what we're to do. In the class earlier today. Some discussion about how we handle that forgiveness situation. Are we working toward reconciliation between us or between them and God? And the answer was yes. Both. But we can't control either one of them, actually. We can do what we can to try to reconcile with each other, but the other person has to respond. We certainly can't control the reconciliation between them and God. We can try to influence it, and we should. But we can need to get over ourselves in thinking that I failed. Not saying we don't need to do the self-examination. Again, this is another one of those tough balancing points sometimes. Yes, we need to be constantly self-examining. Constantly recognizing that I may have done poorly. Or that I could have done better. But we need to get over ourselves thinking, if I'd only done it this way, this would have been different. That's not in our control. But we as a congregation here have the obligation and the opportunity in every situation to behave in a godly fashion. Yes, we're to lift each other up. You can think of a host of times, I would think. Anyone that's been here for any length of time can think of a host of challenges that this congregation has had. And if you haven't been here any length of time, you can look forward to the fact we will have more. Whether it be sin, whether it be death of a close one, whether it be sickness, whether it be, again, the list is infinite. We have had opportunities, and at times we have raised each other up very well. And at times we could have done better. And I'm going to speak for myself, not the other two at this point. I know there are opportunities and times that we as elders could have made different decisions, could have behaved better. And I'd like to say, in the future, we always will. But I'm not that naive, contrary to what some of you may think. We're human. We will make missteps. It's not intentional. It's not certainly the goal we set out with. And some of you have been very good at pointing out to us. Don't think you made the right call here. Don't think you made the right decision. And I hope that we've, to the best of my knowledge, we've always responded in a way that is, you're correct. And we will try to make better decisions going forward. But we count on you to help us stay on that path as well. We covet your prayers. We covet your input. And I know some of you thinking, are sitting to think, well, not from the response I got. The fact that we covet it doesn't always mean we're going to take it or agree. Sometimes you won't understand why we don't. Sometimes we will try to explain. Other times there are just things going on that we're not at liberty to discuss, broadcast. But don't give up on us. If you think of the situation in 1 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, situation where sin was in the congregation, it's well known, and basically, context would suggest, not just well known, but hey, it's cool, it's all right. And they were quickly reminded that, no, it's not. And thankfully, they responded in a way to take care of their situation. But then the second letter came in to remind them that, okay, good, you took care of the situation. Sort of good. The next challenge was the person had corrected their behavior, and the enveloping arms apparently weren't there. Let us not be guilty of that. We've had several come forward at different times with different sin. Sometimes there's kind of a pushback. It should never be. Again, we're reminded that such were you. And we need to remind ourselves constantly. We are and have been sinners. And by the grace of God, we've seen the light. And expand that light out to others. So, in closing, thank you, Fred, for their songs. Been excellent. Constant reminders as you listen to those words and sing those words of how we're to behave toward each other. Consider one another above. Big challenge, but necessary. If we do that, we are guaranteed that the light in this community will shine brightly. That others will be led to Christ. And those that are here will be built up and come closer as they continue to grow. That's our challenge. That's our opportunity. That's our blessing. So as we prepare to sing this song, and by we I mean you, reflect on your situation. If you're in need of putting on Christ for the first time, don't hesitate. We don't know how long we have. This may be it. If you're already a part of Christ, but in need of the prayers of the congregation, also take advantage of this time. If we can aid you in any way, please come forward now.